fixed on the struggling mass forever. The father's spirit churning, thrashing out the ways, the numberless ways, to cause Patroclus's slaughter. To kill him too in this present bloody rampage, over Sarpedon's splendid body? Hector, in glory, cutting Patroclus down with hacking bronze, then tearing the handsome war gear off his back? Or let him take still more, piling up his kills? As Zeus turned things over, that way seemed the best. The valiant friend-in-arms of Peleus' son Achilles would drive the Trojans and Hector helmed in bronze back to Troy once more, killing them by platoons. And Zeus began with Hector. He made the man a coward. Hector, leaping back in his chariot, swerving to fly, shouted out fresh orders. "Retreat! Trojans, now!" He knew that Zeus had tipped the scales against him. A rout. Not even the die-hard Lycians stood their ground. They all scattered in panic down to the last man when they saw their royal king speared in the heart. Sarpedon sprawled there in the muster of the dead, for men by the squad had dropped across his corpse once Zeus stretched tight the lethal line of battle. So then the Achaeans ripped the armour off his back. Sarpedon's gleaming bronze that Menoetius's son, the brave Patroclus, flung in the arms of cohorts, poised to speed those trophies back to the beaked ships. And storming Zeus was stirring up Apollo. "On with it now! Sweep Sarpedon cleared of the weapons. Phoebus, my friend, and once you wipe the dark blood from his body, bear him far from the fighting, off and away, and bathe him well in the river's running tides, and anoint him with deathless oils. Dress his body in deathless ambrosial robes. Then send him on his way with the wind-swift escorts, twin brothers Sleep and Death, who with all good speed will set him down in the broad green land of Lycia. There his brothers and countrymen will bury the prince with full royal rites, with mounded tomb and pillar. These are the solemn honours owed the dead." So he decreed, and Phoebus did not neglect the father's strong desires. Down from Ida's slopes he dove to the bloody field, and lifting Prince Sarpedon clear of the weapons, bore him far from the fighting, off and away, and bathed him well in a river's running tides, and anointed him with deathless oils, dressed his body in deathless ambrosial robes, then sent him on his way with the wind-swift escorts, twin brothers Sleep and Death, who with all good speed set him down in Lycia's broad green land. But Patroclus, giving a cry to Automedon, whipping on his team, Patroclus went for Troy's and Lycia's lines, blind in his fatal frenzy. Luckless soldier! If only he had obeyed Achilles' strict command, he might have escaped his doom, the stark night of death. But the will of Zeus will always overpower the will of men. Zeus, who strikes fear in even the bravest man of war, and tears away his triumph all in a lightning flash, and at other times he will spur a man to battle, just as he urged Patroclus's fury now. "Patroclus, who was the first you slaughtered? Who the last, when the great gods called you down to death?" "First Adrestus, then Autonomous, then Echeclus, then Perimus, Megasus's son, Epistor, and Melanippus. Then in a flurry, Elasus, Mulius, and Pilates. He killed them all, but the rest were bent on flight. And then and there the Achaeans might have taken Troy, her towering gates toppling under Patroclus's power, heading the vanguard, storming on with his spear. But Apollo took his stand on the massive rampart, his mind blazing with death for him, but help for Troy. 3 times Patroclus charged the jut of the high wall. 3 times Apollo battered the man and hurled him back, the god's immortal hands beating down on the gleaming shield. Then, at Patroclus's 4th assault, like something superhuman, the god shrieked down his winging words of terror. "Back! Patroclus, prince, go back! It is not the will of fate that the proud Trojan citadel fall before your spear, not even before Achilles, far greater man than you." Then Patroclus gave ground, backing a good way off, clear of the deadly archer's wrath. But now Hector, reining his high-strung team at the Scaean gates, debated a moment, waiting. Should he drive back to the rout and soldier on, or call his armies now to rally within the ramparts? As he turned things over, Apollo stood beside him, taking the shape of that lusty, rugged fighter, Asius, an uncle of stallion-breaking Hector, a blood-brother of Hecuba, son of Dymas, who lived in Phrygia, near Sangarius's rapids. Like him, Apollo the son of Zeus incited Hector.
"Hector, why stop fighting, neglecting your duty? If only I outfought you as you can outfight me, I'd soon teach you to shirk your work in war. You'd pay the price, I swear. Up with you, fast! Lash those pounding stallions straight at Patroclus. You might kill him still. Apollo might give you glory."
And back Apollo strode, a god in the wars of men, while glorious Hector ordered skilled Cebriones,
"Flog the team to battle!"
Apollo pressed on, wading into the ruck, hurling Argives back in chaos, and handing glory to Hector and all the Trojan forces. But Hector ignored the Argive masses, killing none. He lashed his pounding stallions straight at Patroclus. Patroclus, over against him, leapt down from his car and hit the ground, his left hand shaking a spear, and seized with his right a jagged, glittering stone his hand could just cover. Patroclus flung it hard, leaning into the heave, not backing away from Hector. No, and no wasted shot, but he hit his driver, a bastard son of famed King Priam, Cebriones, yanking the reins back taut, right between the eyes. The sharp stone crushed both brows, the skull caved in, and both eyes burst from their sockets, dropping down in the dust before his feet as the reinsman vaulted, plunging off his well-wrought car like a diver. Cebriones' life-breath left his bones behind. "And you taunted his corpse, Patroclus, O my rider? Look, what a springy man! A nimble, flashy tumbler! Just think what he'd do at sea, where the fish swarm. Why, the man could glut a fleet, diving for oysters, plunging overboard even in choppy, heaving seas, just as he dives to ground from his war car now. Even these Trojans have their tumblers. What a leap!" And he leapt himself at the fighting driver's corpse, with the rushing lunge of a lion struck in the chest as he lays waste pens of cattle, his own lordly courage about to be his death. So you sprang at Cebriones, full fury, Patroclus, as Hector sprang down from his chariot just across, and the two went tussling over the corpse, as lions up on the mountain ridges over a fresh-killed stag, both ravenous, proud, and savage, fight it out to the death. So, over the driver here, and both claw-mad for battle, Patroclus, son of Menoetius, Hector ablaze for glory, strained to slash each other with ruthless bronze. Hector seized the corpse's head, would not let go. Patroclus clung to a foot, and other fighters clashed, Trojans, Argives, all in a grueling, maiming onset. As the east and south winds fight in killer squalls, deep in a mountain valley thrashing stands of timber, oak and ash and cornel, with bark stretched taut and hard, and they whip their long sharp branches against each other, a deafening roar goes up, the splintered timber crashing. So Achaeans and Trojans crashed, hacking into each other, and neither side now had a thought of flight that would have meant disaster. Showers of whetted spears stuck fast around Cebriones, bristling winged arrows whipped from the bowstrings, huge rocks by the salvo battering shields on shields as they struggled round the corpse. And there he lay in the whirling dust, overpowered in all his power, and wiped from memory all his horseman's skills. So, till the sun bestrode the sky at high noon, the weapons hurtled, side to side, and men kept falling. But once the sun wheeled past the hour for unyoking oxen, then the Argives mounted a fiercer, new attack, fighting beyond their fates. They dragged the hero Cebriones out from under the pelting shafts, and Trojans' piercing cries. They tore the handsome war gear off his back, and Patroclus charged the enemy, fired for the kill. Three times he charged, with the headlong speed of Ares, screaming his savage cry. Three times he killed nine men. Then at the fourth assault, Patroclus, like something superhuman. Then, Patroclus, the end of life came blazing up before you. Yes, the Lord Apollo met you there in the heart of battle. The god, the terror. Patroclus never saw him coming, moving across the deadly rout, shrouded in thick mist. And on he came against him, and looming up behind him now, slammed his broad shoulders and back with the god's flat hand, and his eyes spun as Apollo knocked the helmet off his head, and under his horse's hoofs it tumbled, clattering on with its four forged horns and its hollow blank eyes, and its plumes were all smeared in the bloody dust. Forbidden before this to defile its crest in dust, it guarded the head and handsome brow of a god, a man like a god, Achilles. But now the father gave it over to Hector, to guard his head in war, since Hector's death was closing on him quickly. Patroclus, though, the spear in his grip was shattered, the whole of its rugged bronze-shod shadow-casting length, and his shield with straps and tassels dropped from his shoulders, flung down on the ground. The Lord Apollo, the son of Zeus, wrenched his breastplate off. Disaster seized him. His fine legs buckling, he stood there, senseless. And now, right at his back, close up, a Dardan fighter speared him squarely between the shoulder blades with a sharp lance. Panthous's son, Euphorbus, the best of his own age at spears and a horseman's skill and speed of foot, and even in this, his first attack in chariots, just learning the arts of war. He'd brought down 20 drivers off their cars. He was the first to launch a spear against you, Patroclus, O my rider, but did not bring you down. Yanking out his ashen shaft from your body, back he dashed, and lost himself in the crowds. The man would not stand up to Patroclus here in mortal combat, stripped, defenceless as he was. Patroclus, stunned by the spear and the god's crushing blow, was weaving back to his own thronging comrades, trying to escape death. Hector, waiting, watching the great-hearted Patroclus trying to stagger free. Seeing him wounded there with the sharp bronze, came rushing into him right across the lines and rammed his spear shaft home, stabbing deep in the bowels, and the brazen point went jutting straight out through Patroclus's back. Down he crashed. Horror gripped the Achaean armies. As when some lion overpowers a tireless wild boar, up on a mountain summit, battling in all their fury over a little spring of water, both beasts craving to slake their thirst, but the lion beats him down with sheer brute force as the boar fights for breath. So now, with a close thrust, Hector, the son of Priam, tore the life from the fighting son of Menoetius, from Patroclus, who had killed so many men in war, and gloried over him. Wild, winging words. Patroclus, surely you must have thought you'd storm my city down. You'd wrest from the wives of Troy their day of freedom, drag them off in ships to your own dear fatherland. You fool! Rearing in their defense my war team, Hector's horses were charging out to battle, galloping, full stretch, and I with my spear, Hector, shining among my combat-loving comrades, I fight away from them the fatal day. But you, the vultures, will eat your body raw. Poor, doomed, not for all his power could Achilles save you now. And how he must have filled your ears with orders as you went marching out and the hero stayed behind. Now don't come back to the hollow ships, you hear, Patroclus, master horseman, not till you've slashed the shirt around his chest and soaked it red in the blood of man-killing Hector. So he must have commanded. You maniac! You obeyed! Struggling for breath, you answered, Patroclus, O my rider. Hector,
Now is your time to glory to the skies. Now the victory is yours. A gift of the son of Kronos, Zeus, Apollo too. They brought me down with all their deathless ease. They are the ones who tore the armor off my back. Even if 20 Hectors had charged against me, they'd all have died here, laid low by my spear. No, deadly fate in league with Apollo killed me. From the ranks of men, Euphorbus, you came third, and all you could do was finish off my life. One more thing, take it to heart, I urge you. You too, you won't live long yourself, I swear. Already I see them looming up beside you. Death and the strong force of fate to bring you down at the hands of Aeacus' great royal son, Achilles. Death cut him short. The end closed in around him. Flying free of his limbs, his soul went winging down to the house of death, wailing his fate, leaving his manhood far behind, his young and supple strength. But glorious Hector taunted Patroclus's body, dead as he was. Why, Patroclus? Why prophesy my doom, my sudden death? Who knows? Achilles, the son of sleek-haired Thetis, may outrace me, struck by my spear first, and gasp away his life. With that he planted a heel against Patroclus's chest, wrenched his brazen spear from the wound, kicked him over, flat on his back, free and clear of the weapon. At once he went for Automaton with that spear, quick as a god, the aid of swift Achilles, keen to cut him down. But his veering horses swept him well away. Magnificent racing stallions, gifts of the gods to Peleus, shining immortal gifts.
Now Hector, tearing the famous armor off Patroclus, tugged hard at the corpse, mad to hack the head from the neck with bronze and drag the trunk away to glut the dogs of Troy. But in charged Ajax, shield like a tower before him. Hector donned the deathless arms of Achilles, and a fierce fight began. The Achaean heroes and Hector and his captains going hand to hand. So all day long, for the men of war, the fighting raged, grim and grueling, relentless, drenching labor, non-stop, over the great runner Achilles' steadfast aid in arms, an enormous tug of war. As when some master tanner gives his crews the hide of a huge bull for stretching, the beast's skin soaked in grease, and the men grab hold, bracing round in a broad circle, tugging, stretching hard, till the skin's oils go dripping out as the grease sinks in. So, back and forth in a cramped space, they tugged, both sides dragging the corpse and hopes rising, Trojans hoping to drag Patroclus back to Troy, Achaeans to drag him back to the hollow ships, and round him always the brutal struggle raging. Now Nestor's son Antilochus raced off to Achilles' moorings to tell him of Patroclus's death, and urge him to bring the body safely back to his ship.
So the men fought on like a mass of whirling fire, as swift Antilochus raced the message toward Achilles. Sheltered under his curving, beaked ships he found him, foreboding, deep down, all that had come to pass. Agonizing now, he probed his own great heart. Why, why? Our long-haired Achaeans routed again, driven in terror off the plain to crowd the ships. But why? Dear gods, don't bring to pass the grief that haunts my heart, the prophecy that Mother revealed to me one time. She said the best of the Myrmidons, while I lived, would fall at Trojan hands and lead the light of day. And now he's dead, I know it. Menoetius's gallant son, my headstrong friend. And I told Patroclus clearly, once you have beaten off the lethal fire, quick, come back to the ships.
You must not battle Hector.
As such fears went churning through his mind, the warlord Nestor's son drew near him now, streaming warm tears, to give the dreaded message. Ah, son of royal Peleus, what you must hear from me! What painful news! Would to God it had never happened. Patroclus has fallen. They are fighting over his corpse. He's stripped, naked. Hector with that flashing helmet. Hector has your arms. So the captain reported. A black cloud of grief came shrouding over Achilles. Both hands clawing the ground for soot and filth, he poured it over his head, fouled his handsome face, and black ashes settled onto his fresh, clean war-shirt. Overpowered in all his power, sprawled in the dust, Achilles lay there, fallen, tearing his hair, defiling it with his own hands. And the women he and Patroclus carried off as captives caught the grief in their hearts, and keened and wailed. Out of the tents they ran to wring the great Achilles. All of them beat their breasts with clenched fists, sank to the ground, each woman's knees gave way. Antilochus, kneeling near, weeping uncontrollably, clutched Achilles' hands as he wept his proud heart out, for fear he would slash his throat with an iron blade. Achilles suddenly loosed a terrible, wrenching cry, and his noble mother heard him, seated near her father, the old man of the sea in the salt-green depths, and she cried out in turn. And immortal sea-nymphs gathered round their sister. All the Nereids, dwelling down the sounding depths, they all came rushing now. Glitter, blossoming spray, and the swell's embrace, fair isle, and shadowy cavern, mist and spindrift. Ocean-nymphs of the glances pooling deep and dark. Race with the waves, and headland's hope and safe haven. Glimmer of honey, suave and soothing, whirlpool, brilliance, bounty, and first light and speeder of ships and buoyant power. Welcome home, and bather of meadows, and master's lovely consort. Gift of the sea, eyes of the world, and the famous milk-white calm, and truth, and never wrong, and the queen who rules the tides in beauty, and in rushed glory, and healer of men, and the one who rescues kings, and sparkler, down from the cliffs, sleek-haired strands of sand, and all the rest of the Nereids dwelling down the depths. The silver cave was shimmering full of sea-nymphs, all in one mounting chorus beating their breasts as Thetis launched the dirge. Hear me, sisters, daughters of Nereus, so you all will know it well. Listen to all the sorrows welling in my heart. I am agony, mother of grief and greatness. Oh, my child! Yes, I gave birth to a flawless, mighty son, the splendor of heroes, and he shot up like a young branch, like a fine tree I reared him, the orchard's crowning glory, but only to send him off in the beaked ships to Troy, to battle Trojans. Never again will I embrace him, striding home through the doors of Peleus's house, and long as I have him with me, still alive, looking into the sunlight, he is racked with anguish. And I go to his side. Nothing I do can help him, nothing. But go I shall, to see my darling boy, to hear what grief has come to break his heart, while he holds back from battle. So Thetis cried as she left the cave, and her sisters swam up with her, all in a tide of tears, and billowing round them now the groundswell heaved open. And once they reached the fertile land of Troy, they all streamed ashore, row on row in a long cortege, the sea-nymphs, filing up where the Myrmidons' ships lay hauled, clustered closely round the great runner Achilles. As he groaned from the depths, his mother rose before him, and sobbing a sharp cry, cradled her son's head in her hands, and her words were all compassion, winging pity. My child, why in tears? What sorrow has touched your heart? Tell me, please. Don't harbor it deep inside you.
Zeus has accomplished everything you wanted, just as you raised your hands and prayed that day. All the sons of Achaea are pinned against the ships, and all for want of you. They suffer shattering losses. Then, groaning deeply, the matchless runner answered, "O dear mother, true, all those burning desires Olympian Zeus has brought to pass for me. But what joy to me now! My dear comrade's dead. Patroclus, the man I loved beyond all other comrades, loved as my own life, I've lost him. Hector's killed him, stripped the gigantic armor off his back. A marvel to behold, my burnished gear. Radiant gifts the gods presented Peleus that day they drove you into a mortal's marriage bed. I wish you'd lingered deep with the deathless sea nymphs, lived at ease, and Peleus carried home a mortal bride. But now, as it is, sorrows, unending sorrows, must surge within your heart as well, for your own son's death. Never again will you embrace him striding home. My spirit rebels. I've lost the will to live, to take my stand in the world of men, unless, before all else, Hector's battered down by my spear and gasps away his life, the blood price for Patroclus. Menoetius's gallant son, he's killed and stripped." But Thetis answered, warning through her tears, "You're doomed to a short life, my son, from all you say. For hard on the heels of Hector's death, your death must come at once."
"Then let me die at once,"
Achilles burst out, despairing. "Since it was not my fate to save my dearest comrade from his death. Look, a world away from his fatherland, he's perished, lacking me, my fighting strength, to defend him. But now, since I shall not return to my fatherland, nor did I bring one ray of hope to my Patroclus, nor to the rest of all my steadfast comrades, countless ranks struck down by mighty Hector. No, no, here I sit by the ships, a useless dead weight on the good green earth. I, no man my equal among the bronze-armed Achaeans, not in battle, only in wars of words that others win. If only strife could die from the lives of gods and men, and anger that drives the sanest man to flare in outrage. Bitter gall, sweeter than dripping streams of honey, that swarms in people's chests and blinds like smoke, just like the anger Agamemnon, king of men, has roused within me now. Enough. Let bygones be bygones. Done is done. Despite my anguish, I will beat it down, the fury mounting inside me, down by force. But now I'll go and meet that murderer head-on, that Hector who destroyed the dearest life I know. For my own death, I'll meet it freely, whenever Zeus and the other deathless gods would like to bring it on. Not even Heracles fled his death for all his power, favorite son as he was to father Zeus the king. Fate crushed him, and Hera's savage anger. And I, too, if the same fate waits for me, I'll lie in peace once I've gone down to death. But now, for the moment, let me seize great glory, and drive some woman of Troy or deep-breasted Dardan to claw with both hands at her tender cheeks, and wipe away her burning tears as the sobs come choking from her throat. They'll learn that I refrain from war a good long time. Don't try to hold me back from the fighting, mother. Love me as you do. You can't persuade me now." The goddess of the glistening feet replied, "Yes, my son, you're right. No coward's work to save your exhausted friends from headlong death. But your own handsome war gear lies in Trojan hands, bronzed and burnished. And Hector, in that flashing helmet, Hector glories in your armor strapped across his back. Not that he will glory in it long, I tell you. His own destruction hovers near him now. Wait. Don't fling yourself in the grind of battle yet. Not till you see me coming back with your own eyes. Tomorrow I will return to you with the rising sun, bearing splendid arms from Hephaestus, god of fire.
With that vow she turned away from her son, and faced and urged her sisters of the deep.
Now down you go to the ocean's folding gulfs, to visit father's halls, the old man of the sea, and tell him all. I am on my way to Olympus Heights, to the famous smith Hephaestus. I pray he'll give my son some fabulous armour full of the god's great fire.
And under a foaming wave her sisters dove, as glistening-footed Thetis soared toward Olympus, to win her dear son an immortal set of arms. And now, as her feet swept her toward Olympus, ranks of Achaeans, fleeing man-killing Hector with grim, unearthly cries, reached the ships and the Hellespont's long shore. As for Patroclus, there seemed no hope that Achaeans could drag the corpse of Achilles' comrade out of range. Again the Trojan troops and teams overtook the body, with Hector, son of Priam, storming fierce as fire. Three times illustrious Hector shouted for support, seized his feet from behind, wild to drag him off. Three times the Aeantes, armoured in battle fury, fought him off the corpse. But Hector held firm, staking all on his massive fighting strength. Again and again he'd hurl himself at the melee, again and again stand fast with piercing cries, but he never gave ground backward, not one inch. The helmed Aeantes could no more frighten Hector, the proud son of Priam, back from Patroclus's corpse, than shepherds out in the field can scare a tawny lion off his kill, when the hunger drives the beast claw mad. And now Hector would have hauled the body away and won undying glory, if wind-swift Iris had not swept from Olympus, bearing her message, Peleus's son must arm, but all unknown to Zeus and the other gods, since Hera spurred her on. Halting near, she gave Achilles a flight of marching orders.
To arms, son of Peleus, most terrifying man alive, defend Patroclus. It's all for him, this merciless battle pitched before the ships. They're mauling each other now, Achaeans struggling to save the corpse from harm, Trojans charging to haul it back to windy Troy. Flashing Hector, far in the lead, wild to drag it off, furious to lop the head from its soft, tender neck, and stake it high on the city's palisade. Up with you! No more lying low! Writhe with shame at the thought Patroclus may be sport for the dogs of Troy! Yours, the shame will be yours if your comrade's corpse goes down to the dead, defiled!
But the swift runner replied, Immortal Iris, what god has sped you here to tell me this?
Quick as the wind, the rushing Iris answered, Hera winged me on, the illustrious wife of Zeus, but the son of Cronus, throned on high, knows nothing, nor does any other immortal housed on Olympus, shrouded deep in snow.
Achilles broke in quickly. How can I go to war? The Trojans have my gear. And my dear mother told me I must not arm for battle, not till I see her coming back with my own eyes. She vowed to bring me burnished arms from the god of fire. I know of no other armour. Whose gear could I wear? None but Telamonian Ajax's giant shield, but he's at the front, I'm sure, engaging Trojans, slashing his spear to save Patroclus's body.
Quick as the wind, the goddess had a plan. We know, we too.
They hold your famous armour.
Still, just as you are, go out to the broad trench and show yourself to the Trojans. Struck with fear at the sight of you, they might hold off from attack, and Achaeus' fighting sons get second wind, exhausted as they are. Breathing room in war is all too brief.
And Iris, racing the wind, went veering off, as Achilles, Zeus's favourite fighter, rose up now, and over his powerful shoulder Pallas slung the shield, that tremendous storm shield, with all its tassels flaring. And crowning his head, the goddess swept a golden cloud, and from it she lit a fire to blaze across the field. As smoke goes towering up the sky from out of town, cut off on a distant island, under siege, Enemies battling round it, defenders all day long trading desperate blows from their own city walls. But soon as the sun goes down, the signal fires flash, rows of beacons blazing into the air to alert their neighbors, if only they'll come in ships to save them from disaster. So now, from Achilles' head, the blaze shot up the sky. He strode from the rampart, took his stand at the trench, but he would not mix with the milling Argive ranks. He stood in awe of his mother's strict command. So there he rose, and loosed an enormous cry, and off in the distance Pallas shrieked out too, and drove unearthly panic through the Trojans. Piercing loud as the trumpet's battle cry that blasts from murderous raiding armies ringed round some city, so piercing now the cry that broke from Iasides. And Trojans, hearing the brazen voice of Iasides, all their spirits quaked, even sleek-maned horses, sensing death in the wind, slewed their chariots round, and charioteers were struck dumb when they saw that fire, relentless, terrible, burst from the proud-hearted Achilles' head, blazing as fiery-eyed Athena fueled the flames. 3 times the brilliant Achilles gave his great war-cry over the trench. 3 times the Trojans and famous allies whirled in panic, and 12 of their finest fighters died then and there, crushed by chariots, impaled on their own spears. And now the exultant Argives seized the chance to drag Patroclus's body quickly out of range, and laid him on a litter. Standing round him, loving comrades mourned, and the swift runner Achilles joined them, grieving, weeping warm tears when he saw his steadfast comrade lying dead on the bier, mauled by tearing bronze. The man he sent to war with team and chariot, but never welcomed home again alive. Now Hera, the ox-eyed queen of heaven, drove the sun, untired and all unwilling, to sink in the ocean's depths. And the sun went down at last, and brave Achaeans ceased the grueling clash of arms, the levelling rout of war. And the Trojans, in turn, far across the field, pulling forces back from the last rough assault, freed their racing teams from under chariot yokes, but before they thought of supper, grouped for counsel. They met on their feet. Not one of them dared to sit, for terror seized them all. The great Achilles, who held back from the brutal fighting so long, had just come blazing forth. Panthous's son, Polydamas, led the debate, a good clear head, and the only man who saw what lay in the past and what the Trojans faced. He was Hector's close comrade, born on the same night, but excelled at trading words as he at trading spear thrusts. And now, with all goodwill, Polydamas rose and spoke. "Weigh both sides of the crisis well, my friends. What I urge is this. Draw back to the city, now. Don't wait for the holy dawn to find us here afield, ranged by the ships. We're too far from our walls. As long as that man kept raging at Royal Agamemnon, the Argive troops were easier game to battle down. I, too, was glad to camp the night on the shipways, hopes soaring to seize their heavy rolling hulls. But now, racing Achilles makes my blood run cold. So wild the man's fury, he will never rest content, holding out on the plain where Trojans and Argives met halfway, exchanging blows in the savage onset. Never. He will fight for our wives, for Troy itself. So retreat to Troy. Trust me, we will face disaster. Now, for the moment, the bracing god-sent night has stopped the swift Achilles in his tracks. But let him catch us lingering here tomorrow, just as he rises up in arms. There may be some who will sense his fighting spirit all too well. You'll thank your stars to get back to sacred Troy, whoever escapes him. Dogs and birds will have their fill of Trojan flesh, by heaven, battalions of Trojans. Pray God such grief will never reach my ears. So follow my advice, hard as it may seem. Tonight, conserve our strength in the meeting place, and the great walls and gates and timbered doors we hung, well-planed, massive and bolted tight, will shield the city. But tomorrow, at daybreak, armed to the hilt for battle, we man the towering ramparts. All the worse for him, if Achilles wants to venture forth from the fleet, fighters round our walls. Back to the ships he'll go once he's lashed the power out of his rippling stallions, whipping them back and forth beneath our city walls. Not even his fury will let him crash our gates. He'll never plunder Troy. Sooner the racing dogs will eat him raw. Helmet flashing, Hector wheeled with a dark glance. No more, Polydamas. Your pleading repels me now. You say go back again, be crammed inside the city. Aren't you sick of being caged inside those walls? Time was when the world would talk of Priam's Troy as the city rich in gold and rich in bronze. But now our houses are stripped of all their sumptuous treasures, troves sold off and shipped to Phrygia, lovely Maeonia. Once great Zeus grew angry. But now, the moment the son of crooked Cronos allows me to seize some glory here at the ships and pin these Argives back against the sea, you fool! Enough! No more thoughts of retreat paraded before our people. Not that one Trojan will ever take your lead. I'll never permit it. Come, follow my orders. All obey me now. Take supper now. Take your posts through camp. And no forgetting the watch, each man wide awake. And any Trojan so weighed down, so oppressed by his own possessions, let him collect the lot, pass them round to the people. A grand public feast. Far better for one of ours to reap the benefits than all the marauding Argives. Then, as you say, tomorrow at daybreak, armed to the hilt for battle, we slash to attack against their deep-curved hulls. If it really was Achilles who reared beside the ships, all the worse for him. If he wants his fill of war, I, for one, I'll never run from his grim assault. I'll stand up to the man. See if he bears off glory, or I bear it off myself. The god of war is impartial. He hands out death to the man who hands out death. So Hector finished. The Trojans roared assent, lost in folly. Athena had swept away their senses. They gave applause to Hector's ruinous tactics, none to Polydamas, who gave them sound advice. And now their entire army settled down to supper. But all night long the Argives raised Patroclus's dirge, and Achilles led them now in a throbbing chant of sorrow, laying his man-killing hands on his great friend's chest, convulsed with bursts of grief. Like a bearded lion, whose pride of cubs a deer hunter has snatched away out of some thick woods, and back he comes too late, and his heart breaks, but he courses after the hunter, hot on his tracks down glen on twisting glen. Where can he find him? Gripped by piercing rage. So Achilles groaned, deeply, crying out to his myrmidons, "O my captains, how empty the promise I let fall! That day I reassured Menoetius in his house. I promised the king I'd bring him back his son, home to Opuis, covered in glory, Troy sacked, hauling his rightful share of plunder, home, home. But Zeus will never accomplish all our best-laid plans. Look at us, both doomed to stain red with our blood the same plot of earth, a world away in Troy. For not even I will voyage home again. Never. No embrace in his halls from the old horseman Peleus, nor from mother Thetis. This alien earth I stride will hold me down at last. But now, Patroclus, since I will follow you underneath the ground, I shall not bury you, no, not till I drag back here the gear and head of Hector, who slaughtered you, my friend, great-hearted friend. Here, in front of your flaming pyre, I'll cut the throats of a dozen sons of Troy in all their shining glory, venting my rage on them for your destruction. Till then, you lie as you are, beside my beaked ships, and round you the Trojan women and deep-breasted Dardans will mourn you night and day, weeping burning tears. Women we fought to win, strong hands and heavy lance, whenever we sacked rich cities held by mortal men. With that, the brilliant Achilles ordered friends to set a large, three-legged cauldron over the fire, and wash the clotted blood from Patroclus's wounds with all good speed. Hoisting over the blaze a cauldron,
filled to the brim with bathing water, they piled fresh logs beneath and lit them quickly. The fire lapped at the vessel's belly. The water heated, and soon as it reached the boil in the glowing bronze, they bathed and anointed the body, sleek with olive oil, closed each wound with a soothing, seasoned unguent, and then they laid Patroclus on his bier, covered him head to foot in a thin, light sheet, and over his body spread the white linen shroud. Then, all night long, ringing the great runner Achilles, Myrmidon fighters mourned and raised Patroclus's dirge. But Zeus turned to Hera, his wife and sister, saying,
"So, my ox-eyed queen, you've had your way at last, setting the famous runner Achilles on his feet. Mother Hera, look, these long-haired Achaeans must be sprung from your own immortal loins."
But her eyes widening, noble Hera answered, "Dread Majesty, son of Cronos, what are you saying? Even a mortal man will act to help a friend, condemned as a mortal always is to death, and hardly endowed with wisdom deep as ours. So how could I, claiming to be the highest goddess, both by birth and since I am called your consort, and you in turn rule all the immortal gods, how could I hold back from these Trojans, men I loathe, and fail to weave their ruin?" Now as the king and queen provoked each other, glistening-footed Thetis reached Hephaestus's house, indestructible, bright as stars, shining among the gods, built of bronze by the crippled smith with his own hands. There she found him, sweating, wheeling round his bellows, pressing the work on 23-legged cauldrons, an array to ring the walls inside his mansion. He'd bolted golden wheels to the legs of each, so all on their own speed, at a nod from him, they could roll to halls where the gods convene, then roll right home again, a marvel to behold. But not quite finished yet. The god had still to attach the inlaid handles. These he was just fitting, beating in the rivets. As he bent to the work, with all his craft and cunning, Thetis, on her glistening feet, drew near the smith. But Charis saw her first, Charis, coming forward, lithe and lovely in all her glittering headdress, the grace the illustrious crippled smith had married. Approaching Thetis, she caught her hand and spoke her name. "Thetis of flowing robes, what brings you to our house? A beloved, honored friend, but it's been so long. Your visit's much too rare. Follow me in, please. Let me offer you all a guest could want." Welcome words, and the radiant goddess Charis led the way inside. She seated her on a handsome, well-wrought chair, studded with silver. Under it slipped a stool, and called the famous smith. "Hephaestus, come! Look who's here! Thetis would ask a favour of you." And the famous crippled smith exclaimed warmly, "Thetis? Here? Ah, then, a wondrous honoured goddess comes to grace our house. Thetis saved my life when the mortal pain came on me after my great fall. Thanks to my mother's will, that brazen bitch, she wanted to hide me, because I was a cripple. What shattering anguish I'd have suffered then, if Thetis had not taken me to her breast. Eurynome, too, the daughter of ocean's stream that runs around the world. 9 years I lived with both, forging bronze by the trove, elegant brooches, whorled pins, necklaces, chokers, chains, there in the vaulted cave. And round us ocean's currents swirled in a foaming, roaring rush that never died. And no one knew. Not a single god or mortal, only Thetis and Eurynome knew. They saved me. And here is Thetis now, in our own house. So I must do all I can to pay her back. The price for the life she saved, the nymph of the sea with sleek and lustrous locks. Quickly, set before her strangers' generous fare, while I put away my bellows and all my tools." With that, he heaved up from the anvil block, his immense hulk hobbling along, but his shrunken legs moved nimbly. He swung the bellows aside and off the fires, gathered the tools he'd used to weld the cauldrons, and packed them all in a sturdy silver strongbox. Then he sponged off his brow and both burly arms, his massive neck and shaggy chest, pulled on a shirt, and grasping a heavy staff, Hephaestus left his forge and hobbled on. Handmaids ran to attend their master, all cast in gold, but a match for living, breathing girls. Intelligence fills their hearts, voice, and strength their frames. From the deathless gods they've learned their works of hand. They rushed to support their lord, as he went bustling on, and lurching nearer to Thetis, took his polished seat, reached over to clutch her hand, and spoke her name. "Thetis of flowing robes, what brings you to our house? A beloved, honoured friend, but it's been so long, your visit's much too rare. Tell me what's on your mind."
"I'm eager to do it, whatever I can do, whatever can be done."
But Thetis burst into tears, her voice welling.
"Oh, Hephaestus, who of all the goddesses on Olympus, who has borne such withering sorrows in her heart, such pain as Zeus has given me, above all others? Me, out of all the daughters of the sea, he chose to yoke to a mortal man, Peleus, son of Aeacus. And I endured his bed, a mortal's bed, resisting with all my will. And now he lies in the halls, broken with grisly age. But now my griefs are worse. Remember? Zeus also gave me a son to bear and breed, the splendour of heroes, and he shot up like a young branch, like a fine tree I reared him, the orchard's crowning glory. But only to send him off in the beaked ships to Troy, to battle Trojans. Never again will I embrace him, striding home through the doors of Peleus' house. And long as I have him with me, still alive, looking into the sunlight, he is racked with anguish. I go to his side. Nothing I do can help him. Nothing. That girl, the sons of Achaea picked out for his prize, right from his grasp the mighty Agamemnon tore her, and grief for her has been gnawing at his heart. But then the Trojans pinned the Achaeans tight against their sterns. They gave them no way out, and the Argive warlords begged my son to help. They named in full the troves of glittering gifts they'd sent his way. But at that point, he refused to beat disaster off, refused himself, that is. But he buckled his own armour round Patroclus, sent him into battle with an army at his back. And all day long they fought at the Scaean gates. That very day they would have stormed the city too, if Apollo had not killed Menoetius's gallant son, as he laid the Trojans low. Apollo cut him down among the champions there, and handed Hector glory. So now I come, I throw myself at your knees. Please help me. Give my son, he won't live long, a shield and helmet and tooled greaves with ankle straps and armour for his chest. All that he had was lost, lost when the Trojans killed his steadfast friend. Now he lies on the ground. His heart is breaking.
And the famous crippled smith replied,
Courage! Anguish! For all that armour, sweep it from your mind. If only I could hide him away from pain and death, that day his grim destiny comes to take Achilles, as surely as glorious armour shall be his, armour that any man in the world of men will marvel at through all the years to come, whoever sees its splendour.
With that he left her there, and made for his bellows, turning them on the fire, commanding,
Work! To work!
And the bellows, all 20, blew on the crucibles, breathing with all degrees of shooting fiery heat, as the god hurried on. A blast for the heavy work, a quick breath for the light, all precisely gauged to the god of fire's wish, and the pace of the work in hand. Bronze he flung in the blaze, tough, durable bronze, and tin, and priceless gold and silver. And then, planting the huge anvil upon its block, he gripped his mighty hammer in one hand, the other gripped his tongs. And first, Hephaestus makes a great and massive shield, blazoning well-wrought emblems all across its surface, raising a rim around it, glittering, triple-ply, with a silver shield strap run from edge to edge, and five layers of metal to build the shield itself, and across its vast expanse, with all his craft and cunning, the god creates a world of gorgeous, immortal work. There he made the earth, and there the sky and the sea, and the inexhaustible blazing sun and the moon rounding full, and there the constellations, all that crown the heavens, the Pleiades and the Hyades, Orion in all his power too, and the great bear that mankind also calls the wagon. She wheels on her axis, always fixed, watching Orion, and she alone is denied a plunge in the ocean's baths. And he forged on the shield two noble cities, filled with mortal men, with weddings and wedding feasts in one. And under glowing torches they brought forth the brides from the women's chambers, marching through the streets, while choir on choir the wedding song rose high, and the young men came dancing, whirling round in rings, and among them the flutes and harps kept up their stirring call. Women rushed to the doors, and each stood, moved with wonder. And the people massed, streaming into the marketplace, where a quarrel had broken out, and two men struggled over the blood price for a kinsman just murdered. One declaimed in public, vowing payment in full. The other spurned him. He would not take a thing. So both men pressed for a judge to cut the knot. The crowd cheered on both. They took both sides. But heralds held them back as the city elders sat on polished stone benches, forming the sacred circle, grasping in hand the staffs of clear-voiced heralds, and each leapt to his feet to plead the case in turn. Two bars of solid gold shone on the ground before them, a prize for the judge who'd speak the straightest verdict. But circling the other city camped a divided army, gleaming in battle gear, and two plans split their ranks: to plunder the city, or share the riches with its people, hordes the handsome citadel stored within its depths. But the people were not surrendering, not at all. They armed for a raid, hoping to break the siege. Loving wives and innocent children standing guard on the ramparts, flanked by elders bent with age, as men marched out to war. Ares and Pallas led them, both burnished gold, gold the attire they donned, and great, magnificent in their armor, gods for all the world, looming up in their brilliance, towering over troops. And once they reached the perfect spot for attack, a watering place where all the herds collected, there they crouched, wrapped in glowing bronze. Detached from the ranks, two scouts took up their posts, the eyes of the army waiting to spot a convoy, the enemy's flocks and crook-horned cattle coming. Come they did, quickly, two shepherds behind them, playing their hearts out on their pipes. Treachery never crossed their minds.